The Fan on Demand. It's time for the Dean of College Sports. Attendance will be taken. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman. Sportsnet
590.
The Fan.
Sunday morning it is, and a very good morning to you. They say it's going to be another cloudy, gray day with some more rain, just as the sun pokes out just a bit. We're going to have a bright, shiny start to your morning right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and let's hope we don't have a repeat like the other day when it looked as if we needed Noah's Ark. David Grossman is my name. So here's the deal. We want you to stay comfortable. Keep the dial on the station, and we'll keep you informed on everything that's going on in the world of sport. And a reminder, you will notice a different voice at this time on Sunday morning over the next couple of weeks. And that's because I'm going to be away on vacation, and someone else will sit in this chair. Some of you will miss me. And here's the best part. I'm going to return after a couple of weeks away. But we're going to start the show off with a national championship. The sport is rowing. It's the 67th annual final. I don't know if that's old or if it just sounds old. The Canadian Secondary School Rowing Association finals going on today, 11 o'clock, first race. They're all big ones, and it's at the world-famous Henley Course on Martindale Pond, just outside St. Catharines. And Grant Boyd and his Upper Canada College team from Toronto will be there, is there, hoping to pull off some medals and some huge victories. He's the head coach of the Toronto Private School, and he's joining us right now with a prognosis of what could come a little bit later on today. Grant, good morning. How are you?
Morning, David. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So are you happy with how UCC qualified, or did all the boats that you wanted to get into today's final make it?
Well, we'd always like all of our boats to make it, but I think all the boats that we thought would get through to the finals have made it, so we're pleased with our results.
From what you've seen, you have a good feeling going into these finals, or are you a little bit worried as to the outcome of what's going to happen?
We had a coaches meeting last night. We were talking about that exact thing, and I was saying to my coaching staff, I don't think I've ever been more confident in a group of athletes. Just, you know, from what they've done through the winter, our spring training camp in Tennessee, and our results at different regattas throughout the season leading up to this. Every time we push a boat off the dock for a race, I think we're pretty confident.
You got to think about weather and rain and possible tailwinds and all kinds of other things that go on. I would imagine these athletes are intelligent enough and prepared enough to know how to deal with some of this potential inclement weather that we have facing us today.
Well, that's part of coaching. You prepare for everything and expect anything. And our athletes, you know, we've rowed in some pretty nasty weather just in training, just at practice. And you try and teach the athletes to be ready for that. And there are certain changes you will make for certain conditions with rigging the boats and that sort of thing. But in the end, it's just racing, and it's an outdoor sport. So we have to deal with the elements.
Each race is 2,000 meters. You started coaching this sport at Upper Canada College many years ago. Has the program grown in popularity, or is it just holding its own?
I would say it's grown in popularity. I think we have our own little niche within the school. You know, we have a team of 50 athletes, which is one of the bigger varsity sports within the school. You know, within those 50 athletes, there's ranges of talent and ability. We start right in year one and go all the way up to grade 12. So within that group of 50 athletes, there's different levels of talent. And our biggest job as coaches is to develop the young athletes so that by the time they get to senior, they're rowing at a high performance level.
Upper Canada graduated some outstanding rowers to international competition. I think one name comes to mind is Barney Williams. I think he made it to the Olympics, right?
Yeah, he won a silver medal in couple years ago.
Do you see a kid there now that has the potential? I mean, you're a coach, you know the sport inside out, you've developed a lot of these young men. Do you see maybe the possibility that there's another potential international star coming out?
I think there's definitely a few on our team right now. We have a couple athletes that will be attending Harvard next year, who are really keyed into to maybe getting to that international level. We sent an athlete to University of Washington last year named Sash Malawani, who rode for the junior national team last year, represented Canada at the Junior World Championships. And I'm confident he's going to be on the national team one day.
Grant Boyd is joining us. He's the head coach of the Upper Canada College rowing team that's competing this weekend at the 67th Canadian Secondary School Rowing Association Finals, going on the Henley course, the world famous course in St. Catharines. Grant, you're with these kids. It's almost like a family that you've inherited. They get up so early in the morning, they're on the water. I would think they're out participating and practicing and training even before the fish wake up. And there's got to be some serious commitment on the part of these kids when it gets to a sport like this.
Well, with rowing, if you're not committed, you're never going to get to the level that you want to get to. It's hours and hours of training, not just outdoors, but indoors. We train through the winter every morning. Sometimes we train twice a day. We're up at 4:30 in the morning. We're on the water at 5:15 for a couple hours, and then there's usually an after-school workout as well. So, people always say you have to be a little crazy to do this sport, and I think there's something to that.
What is it about coaching that you like at Upper Canada College?
I know I'm a coach, but I think I try and think of myself as more of a teacher. And my biggest job, we're here at the national championships, and of course we want to win today. But the greatest satisfaction I get out of coaching is, especially at this level, is seeing my athletes after UCC and what they're doing with rowing or just the life in general. We talked before about, we've sent a number of athletes to the Ivy League in the States, and they've continued to row, and they've won national championships down there. Those are probably my proudest moments. I'm sure I'll have a few proud moments today, or at least I hope I do. But my proudest moment is when my athletes come back and they say, thank you for getting me ready for life. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we do.
Grant, thanks for doing this. Good luck, not only with the potential inclement weather, but also with the laryngitis as well. We appreciate you talking to us this Sunday morning.
No problem, David. Thank you.
Grant Boyd, head coach of an outstanding rowing program. Every year they produce medals and some great times at Toronto's Upper Canada College. Well, here's something I didn't know. Mixed martial arts, also known as MMA, is attracting more and more high school age students. And in doing so, teams are giving up some traditional sports. And one of them is joining us right now. Adam Blackader is a former student at St. Marguerite Duville High School in Brampton. He played football for the school, then gave it up to focus on MMA, and he's joining us right now. How you doing, Adam?
Good. How about yourself?
Very well, thank you. We appreciate you getting up early in the morning after what was an interesting competition. Some history last night. The first international amateur MMA bout to be held in Ontario. You were competing against Tommy Legray of Chicago.
Actually,
is that right?
I actually did not, because I showed up to the event last night, and it so happens that he decided not to show up.
Was he concerned about you, or did they put another person in place?
I don't know why he didn't show up, but I ended up finding somebody else from Newfoundland. I can't remember the guy's name right now.
And how'd you do?
I happened to come up short yesterday.
Explain that in a little bit more detail.
What's it called? I came out. I heard. I just came out planning on keeping the fight, standing up right away off the bat. I was throwing strikes, kind of landing. I was landing some pretty clean shots standing up. And I never knew, I was planning on taking the guy down, but I guess he beat me to the punch pretty much. Ended up taking me down and then right into side control. So he was on my side and then ended up working for the submission. Kind of caught me off guard because it was more of a striking event. I thought the guy was going to strike a bit more.
Is this a fight that could have ended earlier?
It probably could have went longer than it did.
Is it correct, Adam, that you started mixed martial arts at the age of 15?
Yeah.
I thought you had to be a certain age to get involved in MMA.
Oh, yeah. I think you have to be a certain age to fight and compete in MMA, but to start training, mixed martial arts is made up of different martial arts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to be any age to start training mixed martial arts, because you could train any martial art, right?
Mm-hmm.
like kids who are 8 years old start karate, and you can know karate and do martial mixed martial arts, right? Like I just do jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai, and those just happen to be just like a few of the martial arts involved in MMA, right?
Adam Blackadar is joining us, a graduate of St. Marguerite Duville High School in Brampton, gave up football, focusing now on MMA. You've only been at this for a couple of years. I think it's three. Do you have a particular fighting style that you can explain how you go into a competition?
My fighting style, I would say it's more of like trying to keep the fight standing. Like I think I'm pretty well-rounded. Well, I like to think so. But, I prefer to keep the fight standing, kind of avoid the ground, because my jiu-jitsu game doesn't play well into MMA, right now anyway. So just really aggressive striking, kind of keep the fight standing and just kind of have, yeah, more of an aggressive kind of.
You explained earlier, Adam, the variations of MMA that you're involved in, jiu-jitsu, kickboxing. You won a Canadian title.
Yeah.
In kickboxing that qualified you for the world finals a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. How have you done in international competition since?
That was my only international competition experience, but it was a pretty good experience. Like that really opened my eyes to see like the level of competition like throughout the world. Like it's pretty crazy to see like how guys train, how guys compete in like countries like Russia or like Macedonia or Serbia and stuff like that.
What was it that made you give up on one physical sport, which is what we can call football, mm-hmm. to go in favor of MMA?
Pretty much, like, I played 1 year of rep football, and then after that I ended up playing football for my high school. But the 3 years I played football for my high school, I think all 3 years we went undefeated, and then in the finals, everybody kind of just broke down and kind of just stopped caring, and we ended up losing in the finals 3 years in a row. So I pretty much just like decided, like, if you want to win and you want to kind of be a champion, you could only rely on yourself, right? So I kind of just went more to individual sports, because if you lose or win in an individual sport like mixed martial arts, it's all on you. Like you have no one else to blame. It's your own fault, right? So all you can do is just go back to the gym and train and get better. If you lose or if you win, then celebrate, right?
Well, we wish you well, Adam. I mean, you can't take one fight as any message other than you can improve on when you learn. And that's what competition is all about. We appreciate you taking time. Good luck to you in your future in MMA. And we thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Adam Blackadar gave up football, focusing now on mixed martial arts. And when we come back, well, we just might see if we can get you registered for a 5-kilometer race that's coming your way in a couple of days. Not the one today, but this one has some interesting attachments to it. You sign up and you get free tickets to an Argonaut game. Might even qualify for a scholarship to a college. We'll tell you more in a few minutes. Stay with us. Sunday morning continues with David Grossman on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
22 minutes after 8 o'clock. No better way to spend your Sunday morning. Wait for it. Then right here. David Grossman in the hot chair at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. If you're just getting up, and you didn't know this, Don Valley Parkway closed. Gardner Expressway closed. Both of them till 2 o'clock for a charity bike ride. But the TTC is open after... How do you describe yesterday's tragedy that happened at the Eaton Center? I get this email from George Curtis, coordinator of health and physical education with the largest school board here. Well, it is in Canada, but right here in Toronto. And I figure you can't lose on this. 5-kilometer Fit for Life fun run at Downsview Park next Saturday. Now, I'm not sure if people are going to run around in circles, just as long as they don't tie up the city streets. And get this, everybody, so that means you can bring grandma if you want to sign up. Everyone who competes, unless I misunderstood this, gets two free tickets to the Argonauts versus the Montreal Alouettes preseason game on June 16th at the Rogers Center. So I'm not sure if these are nosebleed section seats or if the Argos are just desperate to fill, or this is just a great idea. And if it is, I congratulate the people who put it all together. Anyway, we're going to find out more because George is kind enough to join us this morning. How are you doing, George?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What did it take to get the Argos to cough up these empty seats? Or do they think you're only going to attract 10 people for this race?
No, we've got 3,500 people already registered for the race.
That's fabulous.
For the run. It is. We're excited. And, you know, I have no hesitation in saying that the Toronto Argos are probably our best partner. What they do for the Toronto School Board and for football in the TDSB, as well for other initiatives like anti-bullying, is exceptional.
Right.
They are truly community partners. They really want to see differences happening to the community. So everybody who does participate in the run next week will receive a voucher for 2 free tickets to that game.
So that's the idea. You got to sign up, and once you start running, whether it's 10 feet or finish the whole event, you get 2 free tickets.
Correct.
That's a great...
It's a new path that's just opened, actually just got paved yesterday at Downsview Park. So it's a beautiful pathway that they'll be going through. And we're not shutting down any city streets to upset anybody or to upset the mayor. It's happening at Canada's National Park here in Toronto.
That's fabulous. And it begs the question, the money that is being raised, where does it go?
The money that's being raised is going into our student nutrition breakfast programs throughout the TDSB. So it's run by the Toronto Foundation for Student Success. So it's free to enter next Saturday. And any money that you'd like to raise or that schools have raised will all be going towards the student nutrition program.
George Curtis is joining us. He's the coordinator of health and physical education for the Toronto District School Board. Now, it's not just the Argo tickets that I found interesting, but there's also a scholarship opportunity to St. Clair College in Windsor.
You know, we've got some great sponsors, including St. Clair College, even BMW and Dempster's and Nestle. And there's many people who wanted to get on board with this. So we're really proud to have some great people supporting a great event.
Was it you that came up with this idea?
No, actually, it was a local school that ran last year. And they ran in a run outside of the city and approached our director. And our director sat down and said, can we make this happen? And, you know, you can make anything happen when you have support. And we're very fortunate that we have a director who believes in students being active and has launched our Fit for Life campaign this year. And as a result, it was easy to make this happen.
What's to stop the Toronto District School Board from making this a mandatory event? I mean, we hear a lot about kids that are concerned with obesity, other kids that just don't want to participate in sport. We hear about the benefits of physical fitness. Why not somehow come up with a process that says everybody who is involved with the Toronto District School Board, students and staff, participate? You can make this one heck of an event.
And you know what? I think we're on that path. I know that we're trying to make that happen. It's very difficult. We're trying to get Fit for Life and being physically active a part of every school's improvement plan. And when everything happens, when it's supported from top down, and this is supported from top down, I mean, everyone knows the research. Every week, you know, last week when we received another F in Canada's National Fitness Activity. It's not news to us, but we know that students do perform better when they're physically active. And now we just have to make sure that it is happening. And it's also convincing parents and the community that your child does need to be active in order to reach their academic goal. And that's the key. They need to be healthy and active so they can reach their academic goal.
George, I just want to touch on that. Two things many people take for granted in this city apparently don't happen, and that is making sure that kids are fed every day and making sure that kids are healthy and active. And the man you just spoke about before, Chris Spence, who's the director of your board, claims that there are something like 100,000 kids, I might have that number just slightly off, who go to school that rely on nutrition programs to make it through the day. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is accurate. It's 1 in 3 students. And it's scary, and it's not just from our poverty-stricken areas in the city of Toronto. Many of our families might have two income earners who leave in the morning, and you've got a 10 or a 12-year-old who are coming to school who are not well-fed. And they're not starting the day off right. And if you're not starting the day off right and your attention span isn't there and your anxiety levels are higher than they should be, it's very difficult to sit down and listen.
You know, that is absolutely a shock to some people to hear that in this city, in Toronto, we have over 100,000 kids that go to school without a good nutrition program. Let's hope people come out, support this race. I'm going to be looking for trustees and superintendents and principals and all kinds of senior staff, and I hope they spend Saturday raising some money as well. Thanks for doing this, George, and good luck to you.
Thanks for your support, David.
George Curtis, the TDSB Athletic Coordinator, and the June 9th Fit for Life run at Downsview Park. Register, participate. You get 2 free tickets to an Argo Alouettes game and a lot more. Sounds like you can't lose on something like that. Well, we usually avoid doing stories about teachers who retire because there's just so many of them. We could fill the entire program, show after show, for months. But there are some who I believe deserve special recognition. And our next guest I've known for a long time. I won't tell you how many years, but a long time. He's the athletic director, at least it will be for a few more weeks, at Toronto St. Michael's College School. And I believe he's done a phenomenal job in what has amounted to be, 36 years? I hope I'm a year or two off, but we're going to find out anyway. Paul Forbes is joining us to talk about his decision to retire and join the ranks of, we'll find out. Paul, good morning. How you doing?
Morning, David. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. Is that true? You're packing it in. You're retiring.
Yeah, I think it's time. I think it's time. Make a change.
I'm told that people could have heard a pin drop at St. Mike's when you announced that was it. It's time to move on. Your tremendous career in not only education, but in coaching as well. You're going to do some other things with your life. What was the reaction initially like from your fellow colleagues, the administration, from students, and since that announcement was made?
Well, I guess it was kind of a surprise to most people. Some people, I guess, kind of think they get used to being around and things are going to stay the same forever. But, I guess I just figured it was time to make a move. And so I guess there's a lot of surprise and a lot of people wondering, are you sure you're ready and, you're making the right decision? But I've made the right decision and I'm happy with it.
What was it, Paul, that many years ago Paul Forbes decided that St. Michael's College School was the place that he wanted to work and he wanted to teach and he wanted to help others?
Well, like every other teacher coming to the faculty, you're looking for a job, and it just so happened that a mentor of mine, Father John Redmond at Michael Power, knew I was looking for a job and told me that St. Mike's was looking for a football coach that might be a good fit. So he recommended me for the job over at St. Michael's, and 36 years later, I'm still there.
You know, there are a lot of people who like to take credit for things that maybe they shouldn't take credit for. And I'm speaking about the Metro Bowl. It was Paul Forbes, you, who launched the first Metro Bowl football final way back in 1982. Was that something that you thought, this would be a great idea, see who the best is in Toronto? Or how did that all come about?
Well, actually, it was myself and about 4 other gentlemen. One of them in particular was Peter Gorman, who at that time was in charge of the College Bowl. And the College Bowl was changing and eventually became the Vanier Cup. But he was looking for something to go along with the College Bowl and the high school championship. So he approached myself and several other high school coaches to start that or launch that inaugural game in 1982.
Scanning your career, Paul, when you look back at the many years at St. Michael's College School, impressive coaching, 7 Metro Bowl championships. I don't think anybody has touched that. And you've had many more titles in your domain in football. What was the sport's highlight? Is there one that stands out that you're always talking about or you're going to be thinking about that you were involved in specifically? And it may not have been as a head coach, but as an athletic director. I guess the number one highlight for you.
Actually, I'd like to say there's been so many, David, at St. Mike's, and sure, a lot of them for me personally revolve around football, but, with our school, there's been so many wonderful track athletes and hockey players and some of the junior A championships that we won against one memorable series was St. Michael's playing against Sarnia Sting, and it went seven games, and each team won their first three games on the road. So game seven was at St. Michael's, and the place was packed, but all the kids put St. Michael's, changed the name of St. Michael's Arena, put the Sarnia name in front. They knew that all the teams were winning on the road. So we did win that game seven in overtime, and I remember that series. It's been quite a remarkable night.
What was your biggest challenge?
Biggest challenge is to keep up with the kids and how they develop and how much they need more and more each year in terms of coaching. Keep up with the skill development and systems in the game. Keep up with them. Kids are so much more dedicated every year and want more from you, so you got to keep up with the times and be able to give them what they need.
You've always come across, Paul, as this quiet guy. And now maybe I don't know you well enough, or maybe I just get you at a time where you are quiet. But was there a time when Paul Forbes lost it in a game or an event or something? And what course of action did you take?
Well, our emotions get the best of it sometimes, and certainly as a younger coach, I would like to change a few things from game to game and not be so emotional with some of the situations. But all in all, I think, you know, you just grow mature in the job like anything else, and you learn to calm down a little bit and handle each situation a little bit better as you go forward.
Well, Paul, you've done wonders for St. Michael's College School. For that matter, you've done a lot of great things for high school sport in general. And you've set, I would say, a model here that's going to be tough to follow. I don't know who's going to take over or what the format's going to be, but congratulations to you on a tremendous career as a teacher, as a coach, as an administrator, and someone who I guess a lot of students relied on as a fatherly figure as well. Good luck to you in retirement.
Dave, thanks for having me on. It's been great working with you all these years. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Paul Forbes, athletic director, great guy, St. Michael's College School right here in Toronto, retiring after a career of some 36 years, helping thousands of young boys develop into young men and athletes. After a sports update, we will have a Canadian champ. He's also someone who competed at the Olympics and probably has a couple more belts than I do. Sunday Morning with David Grossman. We'll tell you more on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sunday Morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. David Grossman's my name. Igor Enriquez over there. He's the producer. Dan Riccio over there. He's the, what are you, technical operator? Yeah. Just make sure you can hear us. It's going to be cloudy, overcast, rain expected later in the Toronto area. It's all right. Just stay in bed. Turn the dial to 590. We'll take care of everything from there. Our next guest is one guy. I don't think you want to mess with him. I'm going to put it straightforward. I mean, he has more belts than a men's store. Well, almost. He does have a seventh degree black belt. Sounds a bit scary. Competed at the Olympics. He coaches. Let's just bring him on. We'll find out more about him. Mitchell Kawasaki is joining us from Hamilton. Former Canadian champ in judo. And Mitch, we appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
I got to ask you something. Explain the seventh degree belt, first of all, to our listeners.
Seventh degree black belt is basically an accumulation of knowledge over the years. In my instance, 57 years of judo experience and recognition by the Mecca of judo, known as the Kodokan of Japan, where judo was founded in the year 1882.
Does that mean you can do some damage in a competition?
In the past, perhaps.
Wait, you're too old for it now?
Yeah, I would have to say that age has a significant factor on performance.
All right. I remember as a kid watching some of these TV shows, you know, where you see these guys put their fists through a couple of, you know, pieces of wood. And they crunch these pop cans. Did you do that as a kid?
No, not really. Judo is quite a bit different than many of the other martial arts, and the stigma is that we break boards and break heads, but that's really not the case. Judo by definition, is termed the gentle way. So we find a gentle way to overcome our adversary by throwing them to the ground in a very hard manner, but skillfully, choking them out or allowing them the opportunity to tap out, trying to not break their arm, but to apply a lock to the elbow joint and allow your opponent to submit before injury occurs.
Sounds like you're the kind of guy I need as a bodyguard.
As a matter of fact, one of my former students was the acting bodyguard for John Monroe, who was in a partnership with Pierre Elliott Trudeau at the time.
Let me ask you then, if you explained judo so well, what are your thoughts about MMA?
I think it's sometimes misconstrued that judo is a part of it. Although there's grappling, the grappling aspect of MMA, and it's exciting to watch, it certainly should not be associated with our sport, our Olympic sport, judo, where the intent is really never to hurt your opponent. It's to skillfully defeat your opponent according to the International Judo Federation rules.
Mitchell Kawasaki is joining us from Hamilton, a former Canadian champ in judo freestyle. You've got a lot of accomplishments. I'm looking through many of them here. Coach of the Year for you. You competed at the Olympics back in Montreal. You're a Canadian champ. Can you pick one of them as maybe a highlight for you, or something I missed?
Well, the highlight is certainly competing for your country in the Olympic Games. That was a memory that will be etched forever. But my first experience representing Canada at the 71 World Championships in Ludwigshafen, Germany, certainly is a memorable one for me, because I remember going toe-to-toe with the Japanese champion who went on to become the world champion, and then the next ensuing year went on to become the Olympic champion. And I had a very good bout with that Japanese competitor, going for quite a long time during the match.
The Canadian judo finals are coming up in this city, in Toronto, in July.
Yes.
I want to ask you, Mitch, if I want to go see some real good judo competition, is it going to be the women or the men?
Actually, it's mixed, because we have several women's categories that are going to be very exciting to watch. But at the same time, you'll find the speed of the lower and middleweight categories of the men's divisions are going to be truly exciting. Not to second guess the women. The women's lower weight categories are also very dynamic and exciting.
You were in Greco-Roman wrestling at one time, and then you decided you were going to switch to judo.
Actually, it's the other way around.
Was it the other way around? Judo first and then Greco? Okay, tell us why.
There was an opportunity while I was in university, sitting down at the side watching wrestling. I was up at Lakehead University for specifically gymnastics. And the gymnastics program was shut down abruptly. And so watching Matt's side of a wrestling practice, one of the students pointed me out and said, "I think that guy does judo." So the coach urged me to come on the mats, and then I did some free sparring with the wrestling team, and to their surprise, I was able to throw around some of the wrestlers. So that was my introduction to wrestling. And just before the Olympic Games in 76, I was slated to compete and challenge for the freestyle team, but I blew out my knee and tore my ACL, my ligament, in which case I required surgery. Normally, such a surgery, especially in the 70s, required about a year recovery, but with only 4 months to go before, or 5 months to go before the Olympic Games, I was determined not to give up my dream. So the alternative was to put less pressure and focus on my lower body or my knees. So it was suggested I try Greco-Roman wrestling, which I had no knowledge of at the time.
Mitchell Kawasaki joining us, former Canadian champ in judo, also freestyle Greco-Roman wrestling. I would imagine no matter how good you are, when you're involved in switching from one sport to another, there's a tendency to I don't know, forget, mix up a move here and there. Did that ever happen to you when you're competing in judo, thought it was wrestling and vice versa?
More so from judo to wrestling, yes. In judo, you can attack both the lower body and the upper body, And in freestyle, it's similar. But in Greco-Roman wrestling, you can only attack above the waist. So I always had a tendency to grab or hook or sweep lower body of my Greco-Roman opponents, and then I would have to stop abruptly and then refocus to the upper body. So that took a while to get acclimatized.
The success of the sport of judo, in your opinion, Mitchell, does that depend on clubs with certified coaches?
Absolutely.
Or is there a chance that schools are going to adopt this sport and I guess milk it to what it's supposed to be?
It would be great to get a judo program in the school system, as they are in Japan, as a requirement. But the expertise required to coach judo is the limiting factor for being able to propagate judo throughout the public school, high mm-hmm. school, university system. And so predominantly judo is learned in private clubs, and very successfully so.
Mitch, great having you on. Very much appreciated. Keep doing what you do and what you do very well. Thanks again for your time.
And all the best to the Olympic judo team for 2012 in London, especially Kalita Zapanczyk representing Ontario and Canada.
Good luck. Mitchell Kawasaki, former Coach of the Year, Canadian champ in judo, and he was at the Olympics as well. We're going to go to Peter Godber. Interesting story. Interesting story about this young man. Teenage football player has done very well for himself at St. Andrew's College in Aurora. He's got some big numbers associated with his size as well. 6'3", 280 pounds, teenager, only in grade 11. Got some big name universities also sparking interest. And, well, I don't know. I'd like to be him right now with Rice University in Houston. That's the alma mater of Shamari Williams knocking on his door. And also Baylor University expressing interest. We'll find out more. He's joining us right now. Mr. Godber, how are you, sir?
I'm really good. How are you?
Very well. We appreciate you joining us. What's it like being in grade 11 and having these big name U.S. Texas schools knocking on your door, bidding for your talent next year?
Well, it's really great. I mean, they're two fantastic universities. First of all, great academics and especially great football. And just having an option to pick between two universities like that, it's amazing.
Well, Baylor, of course, graduated Danny Watkins, who was drafted by BC, and he's now with the Philadelphia Eagles, and also Phillip Blake. And then, as I said, Williams, who's also with the BC Lions, came out of Rice University. Do you think all this interest in Peter Godber came as a result of your playing in the International Bowl, which took place in Austin, Texas?
I don't think that's really the case, because most of the guys in the game are already signed. So I think it came more of a result of just my game film and my coaches, and especially Shamari Williams is getting my name out there to the coaches and just knocking on their door. And that's how I got my foot in.
Peter Godber is joining us right now, 6'3", 280 pounds, only in grade 11 at St. Andrew's College in Aurora, an outstanding football player. I would imagine for you the trick is to have one final high school banner year, you know, one great season you could say, look what I've accomplished, but also to stay injury-free. Is that hard for a big guy like you?
No, it's not very hard. You just can't think about it going into the game. If you think about playing injured, that's how you get injured. It's something that never crossed your mind in the game.
Is it too early, or does a guy like you have dreams about the initials CFL or NFL?
Oh, everyone has dreams to play professional, but like I said, it's too early to think about that. I just got to go and think about playing high school ball and then university. I can't look too far for it, or else that's how I'll fall on my face.
Peter Godber, what are you doing this summer? Plans for football?
Working really hard. I'm working with an ex-CFL running back, Fabian Rain. So I'm going to be training with him, getting all my numbers up, my 40-yard, my bench press, my squat, all of that. And I'm going to actually like 6 or 7 university camps too. So I'll be going to Baylor's camp. I'll be going to Rice's camp, University of Houston, Buffalo, and Penn State.
Is there a chance you could surprise all these Americans and say, no, I'm going to stay right here in Canada? We have an excellent educational program. I want to help contribute to the Canadian university game.
At this point, I don't think so, but I'm definitely going to keep all my options open with the Canadian schools just in case something like that happens. I always want to be prepared, but the fact is they can pay for all my university education. So that's like the biggest part for me, just getting all my education paid for.
One more quick question to get in just before we have to go, Peter. I'm kind of curious, a guy with your size, very conscious about what you eat, I would imagine, or are you like me? After 8 o'clock, everything goes down the esophagus.
I used to be like that until I started weighing like 305 pounds, and then I told myself like 2 years ago, I can't do this if I actually want to play football at the next level. So then I really slimmed down. I was like 270, and then I started gaining back good weight, just like muscle, and I try to lose as much fat as I can.
Well, good luck to you. I know you benefit from a guy in Len Gurr, a football coach at St. Andrews College, one of the best. He'd like to clone you and have five Peter Godbers on his offensive line this year. You have a bright future ahead of you. Good luck, and one day we hope to see you playing professional football.
Thank you, sir.
Peter Godber from St. Andrews College, an offensive lineman. You'll make a note of the name. He's going to be in the pros within a matter of time. My name's David Grossman. It's Sunday morning. Stay with us. We'll continue on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. It's time for the Dean of College Sports. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hour number two of Sunday morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 3 minutes after 9 o'clock. Sun is playing games, poking its head out and then hiding. Going to be overcast most of the day. Rain expected. Forget about watering the grass until next summer. Gosh, we got a lot of rain in the city. Good morning. Sunday, June 3rd. David Grossman is my name. I was up at Humber College a few days ago and had a chance to speak with the alumni relations people, Kim Warner, Adelia Marchese, and we had this fabulous gourmet lunch at Humber's School of Hospitality, and Richard Pittaway and the folks up there. He's the food and beverage manager. I know they're all listening in. Anyway, the students training to pursue a career did a fabulous job. Nobody spilled anything on me, and they were meticulous for our service. The salmon was great. Actually, it was scrumptious. It was really good. But they ran out of berries. They could have run down the corner store and got some berries. Anyway, it was just a marvelous time. So thanks to the folks at Humber College. Our next guest is a four-time Olympic gold medalist for Norway. He's also the chief executive officer, and he's the president of A Right to Play, an organization here in Toronto whose mission is very clear. They want to improve the lives of young people in some of the most disadvantaged areas of the world. And how they do that, well, a variety of ways, but through the power of sport. That's one of the key ways, and we're thrilled that Johan Koss is joining us right now. We're not too sure for how long, though, and I'll explain that in a second. Johan, good morning, sir.
Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm very well. We appreciate you taking time. You're a very busy man, but let's get the important thing out first. Your wife is expecting a child. How's she doing, and can you hang in there for a couple more minutes?
Well, she's fine. Thank you so much for asking. Well, the due date is today, and yes, you know, we are all waiting and waiting and waiting. But, yeah, she's doing great, and it doesn't seem like it's going to happen during our show, David, so you'll be fine.
All right. If it does, you can name the baby Sportsnet.
I will. Would be the middle name.
All right. Right to Play. What made you get started in this?
Well, you know, I travel around the world after my Olympic career, and I met children in war-torn countries, basically ravaged by war, poverty, or disease, and I found them in the worst places of the world. And if we wanted ever to break this cycle of violence, we need to be able to provide them something what we take for granted, you know, the child's freedom. It's an opportunity to express themselves through games and participation in a safe environment with their role models and coaches. And I think that's, I thought, you know, I mean, obviously growing up in Norway and now living in Canada and Toronto, it's, you know, we live in such a safe and wonderful environment, and it's almost taken for I have to say, I'm shocked provide this most basic need for children. So they're obviously using play and sport as a tool for learning. So it's not only about participation, but in Benin, one of our CEDA-funded programs, which is the Canadian International Development Agency, which is funding from the Canadian government, we work with the government of Benin and the local communities in providing our program in the schools. And what we found in some of the areas where the dropout rate was way over 50% of the 6 years, the first 6 years in school, now there are 96% graduation rates, you know, and there are obviously tremendously, there are boys and girls staying in school, you know, working hard and wanting to become, you know, leaders in their own communities. And we have that same examples in health and in conflict prevention.
Johan Kaas is joining us. He's a four-time gold medalist in speed skating for Norway, currently the chief executive officer and president of Right to Play. I got to ask you, how do you get kids to feel good about themselves in sport when there's just so much emphasis on winning?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I think, you know, first of all, I think competitive sport is always good to have, but it's not about winning necessarily. Listen, I mean, it's no better place to learn how to lose is on the sport field. I mean, you can always try again and try harder, and you need to motivate the children in finding out what they did well when even in when they're losing. And I think that, you know, I mean, in all aspects, I mean, we all, this, you know, sometimes best lessons coming when you're not winning. Though we also emphasize when you win that you have to win with responsibility and respectfulness to the other, your competitors and your team members, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of added to the behavior who needs to be watched in and during games. But Right to Play, we also actively work with games, like just playing a game of tag and teaching lessons through that, which there are not necessarily the winner but is or the loser, but it's the participatory action. And every single activity we do, even if it's sport or play, they're having a lesson from it. And we talk about the lesson, and we do what we call reflect, connect, apply, which is a methodology which we developed and honed into through all of the activities. It doesn't matter if it's in China, in the Middle East, in Africa, or Latin America, or through our First Nation program here in Ontario.
Johan, you were quoted as saying that play is a fundamental right of all children and is essential to healthy development. Do you believe, from what you've seen, that Canadian kids, teens, children, young kids, get a right to play? Or did you find that a lot of them face restrictions? There are all kinds of conditions and roadblocks that are preventing them from participating in sport and as a result have an effect on their life skills and their better futures.
Well, I think in general we will say that they have a pretty good access to play and sport in Canada, though there are groups in our communities who do not have the right to play, and that is a sad story. And that's particularly children, the barrier to entry is most of financial if you live in urban or partly rural settings. But when it comes to other places like the First Nation communities and all that, there are literally no capabilities or capacities to implement activities. And I think that's some of the things we need to look at. The other thing I think our community in Canada and Toronto need to look at is the lack of physical activity. Like even with the organized sports, we are not spending enough time being physical active, and we will see tremendous health problems of that in the next 10, 15, 20 years due to, you know, the regular obesity problem and the non-communicable diseases. So, we need to encourage all types of activities for all ages. So, obviously, Right to Play focusing on children and youth, and that's our practice. But we should try, you know, for the city to become more active, having everybody out. So you
have a young person's life, and that is an opportunity to participate in sport and physical activity. Good luck to you. Johan Kaas, four-time Olympic gold medalist in speed skating, president, CEO of Right to Play, a great organization, humanitarian, development, helping kids around the world, also right here in Canada, an impact on behavior and social change and, well, a lot more. Let's hope organizations like that continue to expand. Well, let's talk some tennis now. I had the pleasure of watching our next guest dominate the guys' competition in tennis here in Toronto, and it's Roman Trakulja. He's good. He's the Toronto High School singles champ, but he's been a member of tennis for a long time. He played in Montreal. He trained at the national level, and he's now attending, at least for a few more weeks, a school here in Toronto, Vaughan Road Academy, as a gifted athlete. There's a lot more. We're going to talk to him because he's joining us. Roman, how you doing? Roman? Oh, I think we may have lost him. Anyway, we'll get him back on the line, but we're going to talk a little bit about tennis and his future and his plan to participate in tennis at the highest level possible. He's got a scholarship to Penn State University. To go there, you got to be pretty good. And I think he's going to study and use the scholarship opportunity to hopefully win an NCAA championship. Move up the big leagues and participate with everybody else. We got him back on the line. Thank you, Igor. Roman, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm good, good.
Someone watching you play tennis for the first time, what would they spot that is impressive? And what would they say, that guy needs some improvement in?
I don't know. I'd say my strengths in tennis are probably my serve and my forehand. That's just like my forehand's been, it just came pretty natural to me when I started playing tennis. And I would say that a weakness is maybe my movement. I don't really move too well around the court, but I guess I make up for it with my big shots.
You do. I mean, you've got some power in that forehand. I mean, you're not Milos yet, but I'll tell you, that ball was going by a lot of your competitors at the Toronto High School Tennis Championship.
Yeah. I mean, that's like my comfort shot. You know, when things aren't really going too well, I just try to get that shot going, and then things usually get better from then on.
What was the reaction at home when you got the call that said Penn State wants you to come down and study and play tennis there?
It was amazing. Like, my mom was really happy for me. My dad was really happy for me. Even my brother, they asked us to go on a visit first, and then we went down to Penn State to see what it's like, and, you know, we all loved it. So it was a great experience.
What made you come to Vaughan Road here in Toronto when you were actually involved in the National Training Center in Montreal? And one would think that you can expand your knowledge by being right there rather than come back here. What made you flip-flop back and forth?
Well, Vaughan Road has like a good program. It has the Interact program, which is for athletes. It like coordinates our schooling with our.
It's a gifted athlete program.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's like what made me come over there compared to different schools. But in Montreal, I was there for 2 years, and then after 2 years, I left. I think it was like a good idea maybe to come home for a bit. It's getting a bit homesick, and then I was going to college soon, so maybe just like get good results in Canada. I wouldn't know, around the world, I played pretty good tournaments in Mexico, in South America, I won a few doubles tournaments, so I think South America was actually where I had my best tournaments internationally.
Great opportunity for you coming up at Penn State. At least they're going to pay. Good luck. Your parents like that as well. All the best to you in tennis, and hopefully your dream will come true one day of playing at the professional level, making a little bit of coin as well. We thank you very much. Continued success to you, Roman.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Roman Trakulja, a great young tennis player. I would say another diamond in the rough. He's going to be real good, so watch out for that name. We're going to take a break. We got lots more coming your way. Stay with us. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're nicely into the month of June, final few weeks of school, and it's also pro football training camp time, and our next guest has been busy, shall we say, keeping in shape, and looking forward to what will be another great season, catching passes, piling up yards, and in his case, scoring touchdowns, and hopefully a lot of them too. I'm talking about Sean Gore, who went to high school here in Toronto. Funny thing, the school he started out at never had a football team. He played some rugby, then went on to Bishop's University and was picked 10th overall in the 2010 Canadian Football League draft by the BC Lions. And he's joining us now from the West Coast. Sean, good morning, and thanks for doing this.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's been a long time. I remember you as this high school kid that was running around, and you say at Don Mills. I remember you in grade 12 at Newton Brook Secondary when you actually played football.
Yep, that was grade 12. I got my shot at playing high school football at Newton Brook.
And now, I'm not sure whether you and the BC Lions want to start another season like you did last year, 0-5, but it certainly ended on a nice note with a Grey Cup. What do you think? Chances are win every game or go 0-5 and maybe make a 2 in a row?
You know what? It's exciting to do that, but a little bit risky. I'm not sure we'd want to go 0-5 again. I think at least winning 4 of those 5 would be a good start for us to lead us right to that Grey Cup.
Sean Gore is joining us, a Torontonian now with the BC Lions. When you look back at last year, Sean, would you consider it to be what they call a breakout year for you? You had, well, I think it was 60 catches, close to 900 yards, a chance, I guess, to show off your talent and lots of hard work as well. Or was there a lot of luck in it?
Well, you know, I characterize it as a learning year. It was my first year really getting on the field on offense, really seeing a lot of different new defensive coverages, and really being in it all, right, in the chaos. And I felt that from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, I learned a lot. I think I improved, and with this offseason, I've been here in Vancouver training with Travis Lule, Giroy Simon, Paris Jackson, a bunch of the guys, and I feel that I'm ready for this year, a breakout year.
Sunday morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, our guest this morning, Sean Gore, wide receiver with the BC Lions, Torontonian as well. For you, was it back at high school? I seem to think that your stardom started in the Ontario Varsity Football League.
Yep, the OVFL.
With the Metro Toronto Wildcats, right?
With the Toronto Wildcats. Previously before that, I actually played during the summer with the North York Grizzlies and the Pickering Dolphins for a year.
Where did you, in your opinion, where did you think you got the better brand of football? Was it at that 1 year at Newton Brook or with Pickering or in the OVFL?
Honestly, it would probably have to be in the OVFL with the Toronto Wildcats. I had a lot of great coaches. I had good coaches at Newton Brook as well, but with the Wildcats, I'm a receiver, and we had coaches that specifically focused on the receiver position. So I learned a lot about reading coverages, running routes, and it really got me ready for the university level.
Do you feel the pressure going into training camp this year to I guess to do well? I mean, you do want to be a member of that team, obviously, but there are a lot of young kids waiting to take an opportunity away from you. The competition is strong. You've got to be at your best all the time. Do you feel that extra bit of stress now that you're defending Grey Cup champ?
You know what? Surprisingly, not really. I feel just more at ease, more confident with the system, just ready to compete. We got the rookies. I've been in camp for 3 days now. They started rookie camp on, I think it was Wednesday. So they're getting a little caught up, but I'm so excited for that competition to have some new blood, new people around, new energy.
You were back in Toronto recently hoisting the Grey Cup and visiting some schools, one of them being Don Mills. What went through your mind when you saw all these young kids staring at you and here's Sean Gore, former high school athlete here in this city, hoisting the Grey Cup?
My mind went right back to when I was one of them, when I was that young, you know, trying to figure out what I wanted to do in my life, where I was going to be. And seeing when I was in high school, actually, Pinball Clemens made a couple appearances, and I remember seeing him and every word he said kind of just stuck. So I just made sure I had some good, you know, quality advice to give because for a lot of those kids, it'll probably stick.
Sean Gore with us on Sunday morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Key member of the BC Lions Grey Cup Championship last year, wide receiver. I got to ask you, what's harder for you? Now that you've experienced, you're in your mid-20s, is it the mental preparation or the physical preparation?
Well, you know what? That's a great question. The physical preparation really, it's a lot more of maintaining in college. You're trying to lift the big weights, get personal gains and everything, you know, squat more than you've ever squatted before, and then just to physically dominate. But over in this game, you need, everybody's fast, everybody's good. You need to it's going to be mentally prepared to see different things on the field, to react to different situations. So I think the mental preparation has to go up a notch at this level.
2 years ago, Sean, you tried out with the Green Bay Packers. I want to ask you, what was that like, and did you ever think in your right mind that this young kid growing up in the city of Toronto would one day be in the same training camp as the Green Bay Packers?
You know what? That was an unbelievable experience. I did not see that one coming. I played with players. I was practicing every day with Aaron Rodgers, Donald Driver, Greg Jennings, all those guys. And it was a learning experience. It got me prepared. It was kind of a shock coming from Bishop CIS school to NFL training camp. But there's no better way to learn than under fire when everything's just thrown at you all at once and you have to react. So it was tough, but it made me a better person.
I had a chance to talk to some of your former coaches about Sean Gore, and I asked them, how do you describe this guy? And some of them said respectful. A couple of them said humble, and a couple others said very polite. Do you agree with them?
Yeah, I agree with them. I don't try to toot my own horn or anything. I believe that, you know, anything that you get is from hard work, and that you're never as good as you're going to get or good as your highest ability. There's always more, and you have to stay hungry for that more. You know, when they say, I'm a big fan of the Rocky movies and the Eye of the Tiger, and I really believe in that. You have to keep stay hungry. You have to keep that Eye of the Tiger, where that mentality where you're going to keep pushing because nothing's handed to you. You have to go and take it.
Second down situation for BC Lions. Ball is thrown to you. Easy catch. You drop it. What goes through your head? Do you get down on yourself very quickly, or do you just sort of push it aside and say, okay, let's start fresh?
Oh, there's more game to play. You know what? I got teammates relying on me, so I can't get down on myself, feel sorry for myself. I got to make the next play, you know, score a touchdown and win the game. You know, I have enough time after the game to watch film and get angry about it. But in that moment, I got to make the next play.
June 13th, Saskatchewan at BC, the preseason opener. I would imagine you're probably waiting for August the 6th, and that's a long time down the road, but that's when BC and Sean Gore come to Toronto to play the Argos.
Yeah, that's my home game. Really excited for that. You know, I'll get a lot of friends and family out for it. It's on my calendar. Playing the Sky Dome, where I've been watching the Argos for a lot of years, it's one of the things I'm really looking forward to. I can't wait.
Sean, are there sometimes you flick your fingers and you just say to yourself, wow, I can't believe it. I'm actually a professional football player in the CFL.
Yes. There are times when I wake up and say, wow, I get to go train, and that's my job. That's my career. And I love it.
We got to move along, Sean. Good luck to you. Have a great season coming up. We appreciate you doing this. Thanks very much for your time.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
Sean Gore, what an outstanding young athlete and a great individual. I remember him here in Toronto. Went on to do success after success as Bishop's University now. Well, what more can you say? Great Cup champion. Just before we break, I got to mention a couple of names here. Nice to see former local athletes doing well. And we have Newmarket's Ezra Millington, the latest to join the CFL. He learned his football at the University of Ottawa as a wide receiver, and now he's signed on for 2 years with the Montreal Alouettes, so we wish him well. Be here in Toronto for a preseason game, probably. And Toronto's Reed Acton, how about this, finishing his education at Loyola University in Baltimore. He's now an NCAA champ in lacrosse, and he also gets to shake hands with some guy called Obama. That should be interesting. And Danny Demianenko at St. Michael's College School, the latest talented athlete to put his name on a U.S. scholarship. For him, it's volleyball. He's also a swimmer, pretty good at that too. And he's going to some school down there called UCLA, which I don't have to tell you more. Very good for academics, says something about him, and very good when it comes to sport, going from a St. Michael's College Blue to a UCLA Bruin. And I want to congratulate Adam Van Coverden. All he did was win a gold medal at the World Cup in Moscow the other day in the K1 1000, getting ready for the Olympics. Finished first, 3 minutes, 55.2 and change in seconds. Not bad, considering he had a silver and a bronze the past 2 weeks in competition in Poland and in Germany. So a couple of names worth noting. When we come back, we have a real treat for you. A guy who I'd like to have a body like him. I'll tell you more. Stay with us. Sunday morning with David Grossman on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Okay, here we go with our last segment of the morning. 9:42, David Grossman. Glad you're with us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's going to be overcast, already is. More rain projected. And just a reminder, I'm going to be off the next couple of weeks, vacation time, but we'll return on June 24th. You can email me at sundaymorning@fan590.com. Follow me on Twitter at GrossmanFan590. I want to say thanks to Brad from King City. He reminded me that our last guest, Sean Gore, wouldn't have gotten a start in football if it wasn't for his worship. The mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, and his football foundation, who kicked in a lot of dough at Newton Brook Secondary School to start up a football team. And that's something that Rob has done for a number of schools in this city. And fortunately for Sean Gore, he moved from Don Mills, where they had no football program, to Newton Brook. And you heard the rest of the story. So thanks, Brad, very much for the message. Well, you've seen some of those massive muscles on bodybuilders. Like, I think if you put oranges between their bicep and forearm and tell them to flex their muscle, I'm convinced that they'd be able to squeeze orange juice at the same time. And it's not just guys. The gals, too, are in great physical shape. And I would think that they are not porking down six burgers at a time. They are very conscious and cautious about what they eat. Big show in Toronto this weekend at the Metro Convention Center, today being the last day. And we're very, very pleased to have joining us now a man who holds the record of 8 consecutive wins as Mr. Olympia. 8, not 1, but 8, and in a row. And we're talking about Ronnie, Big Ron Coleman, joining us. How you doing, Ronnie?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Welcome to Canada.
Oh, good to be back.
Well, it's glad to have you there. As a matter of fact, I'm glad you're where you are and you're not here, because your physique must be something else. We'd probably have to do some renovations just to get you into the door.
Well, not really. I'm not as big as I used to be.
Give us an idea about your size.
Right now, I'm all in that 290. I'm normally in the threes, but recently had neck surgery, so I hadn't been able to train the way I normally do.
And your height?
Height, I'm 5'11".
All right, so you're under 6 feet, but you're a little close to 300 pounds as well. I've been told that when you run at someone, and this is during your prime, it's like staring at a locomotive at full speed.
It's been so long since I ran at somebody. I really didn't forget how fast I was when I was running. But I was pretty fast in college, though. But, you know, past that, you know, when I worked full-time for the police department, I had too much running after people.
All right. We're going to talk about the police department in just a minute. But I, and that's a very interesting story in itself. You are what they call a legend in this sport. I want to ask you, now that you, I mean, you've been in Toronto a couple of days. Do people freak out when they see you step out of an elevator?
Sometimes they do. When I catch them off guard, of course, yeah.
What kind of reaction have you been getting here in Toronto?
Well, you know, I've been coming to Toronto for a long time now. I've even won a pro show here a couple times. So I'm like almost like a local, because I come here just about every year. So people are kind of used to me now. So, but the ones that the kids are the ones that really shocked me, because I'm trying to figure out how they know me so well. But I guess it's because of all the YouTube and the social network stuff they got out there now, because I'm pretty popular on YouTube. I got, you know, millions and millions of hits on YouTube there. So I'm saying it's got to be that. But they really freak out when they see me.
I would imagine they would. I mean, I'm looking at a picture of you right now, and I'm scared. Ronnie, Big Ron Coleman joining us, American professional bodybuilder who's in Toronto for the Big International Federation of Bodybuilders Toronto Pro Super Show that's going on at the Toronto Convention Center, and it finishes today. Now, my friend, who's also a colleague of yours, Val Mascariello, owns Team Body Pro here in Toronto. And I remember when Val was at Scarlet Heights, a high school here in the city, and he was a wannabe pro soccer player. Big Val now tells me that you, at the age of 48, you're still one massive body of muscle. How do you continue to keep that muscle when you're retired from competition?
To be honest with you, I've always been a big, massive, muscular guy. It's kind of like stems back from when I was 10, 11 years old. I was muscular back then. So genetics plays a lot in it. And plus, I still train. I don't train as hard as I used to, but I still train. And that's all it takes for me because I built up so much muscle over the years, and the body has muscle memory, so it kind of never goes away. As long as I continue to train on some form or another, I'm going to be a big muscle, yeah, because I'm, genetically gifted in that way to be big and muscular. But I've been big and muscular all my life, even when I was, 10, 11-year-old kid.
A lot of athletes look at muscle being an important part of their success story. How do you, Ron, build muscle and get strong? Is it the same thing?
No, it's two different things. Strength is also has a lot with genetics. A lot of bodybuilders out there, are big like me, but they're not as strong as I am because strength has a lot to do with genetics. And I've been on powerlifting teams, and I've been doing strength stuff all my life too. So strength and genetics and bodybuilding and genetics go pretty much hand in hand.
He's won 8 consecutive Mr. Olympia titles. We're talking about Ronnie, Big Ron Coleman, who's joining us right now. Now, Ron, I'm sure you've been asked this question before, and I'm sure it's been raised many times along your path. People see bodybuilders, they see the physique, they see the size, the muscle, and they wonder if bodybuilders are taking any form of illegal supplements or shall I say steroids to develop their body to be such as it is. Can you comment on something like that?
Well, it goes with, the individual guy. So it's kind of hard for me to say because I really don't know. I worked all those years with the police department, and for the most part, we couldn't do anything because we were constantly tested, or at least once or twice a year. We had our physical tests and stuff, but for me, I never did anything. So for the most part, it's kind of hard to say about what other guys do, but for the most part, I've heard that, most people do believe that, If you're a bodybuilder, that you have to take them.
You were born in.
I think it has a lot to do with genetics, though. Just because you're taking stuff don't mean you're going to be big. And just because you're a bodybuilder doesn't necessarily mean you have to.
You were born in Louisiana, and you played some football when you went to school at Grambling State University. As a matter of fact, I think you were a linebacker with the Tigers, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever, you must have had some size back then as well. You were talking about genetics and about conditioning and strength. Did you ever think of playing football professionally?
Yeah, I was actually in the process of getting drafted in my senior year. And I was suddenly ended up getting injured halfway through the season. And I never really recovered. So once the season was over with, they're normally looking at most of the guys that are healthy to draft. And so they didn't draft me, so I kind of just gave up on it because I knew how hard it would be if I went out there and just tried to walk on and make the team, and I didn't just want to go through it.
Well, as hard as it was for you, you still went on to finish your education. You got a 4-year degree and an honors degree as well. What made you then decide to enter a career in law enforcement? And this was in Arlington, Texas. I can just imagine somebody getting a call and you having to get in a squad car, drive over to that place. Whoever was causing problems would then see the size of you. I'm sure they would have second thoughts about causing problems. What made you get into law enforcement?
Well, I applied at maybe 2,000 or 3,000 jobs in accounting, and none of them fell through. So, but when I always got the paper, they were always hiring for police officers. And the reason why I didn't get an accounting job is because I want you to have experience, and I'm not going to get any experience and nobody hires me. So I just said, oh, it's time to give up on this career.
Ronnie Big Ron Coleman joining us, American professional bodybuilder, and 8 consecutive times won the Mr. Olympia title. Now, you're a pro in this, and I know you've traveled the world, but I want to ask you, what's it like training people in bodybuilding in China?
You know something? I've never been able to experience. I've been in China several times, but never trained anybody. Most of the time, I was doing promotions.
Okay.
So I never got to a point where I was able to train anybody.
A guy like you, though.
Small, but anyways.
I'm just wondering, where do you buy your clothes? What size shirt do you wear?
You know, my clothes are tailor-made, so I don't really buy any clothes off the rack. If I try to go to a store or something, I normally get a size like 2X or something like that, 3X.
3X for a shirt.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But those are just T-shirts. But other shirts, dress shirts, I don't buy them.
I would imagine what they do is buy a couple of yards of material and they design a shirt to fit your body around that, right?
Yeah, probably. That's what they'd have to do. But I get all my stuff tailor-made, so it's pretty expensive. But, you know.
What's been your reaction to the competition you've seen in Toronto so far at the Metro Convention Center?
The competition, well, this is kind of a small show, so there's not a lot of the big name guys here. So these are most of the lower bottom guys that you know in the world.
Some of the women, though, the women appear to be in pretty good shape as well. Some of them, I wouldn't even want to get close to.
Well, they didn't have women bodybuilding here. They had mostly figure, bikini, and fitness, which are the really great, great, great looking girls.
See, it seems like everything now has a master's category associated with it. And I know you were mentioning before you had some surgery on your spine, your neck. Are you thinking about a possibility of a comeback in the master's category?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. I just need my body to heal up. So as soon as that happens, I probably will.
We wish you well, Ronnie. We appreciate you very much taking time to speak with us this morning. And again, doors wide open for you to come back to Canada again. Thanks very much for your time.
All right, thank you.
Ronnie Coleman, 8-time Mr. Olympia. Just a massive, well, flesh and muscle. How else do you describe it? The guy's huge, and even though he's close to 50, still got a lot of power in him. That's it. We got to pack up. We got to move on. I want to thank our many guests this morning, and a huge thanks to you as well for spending time with us and for your comments via Twitter and also email. Grossman590, a fan590 on Twitter, I should say. Igor Enriquez produced the show. Technical operations from Dan Riccio. I'm going to be away, as mentioned, on vacation the next 2 weeks. Be back on June the 24th. Until then, take care, enjoy, be well. Roger Lajoie coming up next. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman, only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.